Wednesday, July 21, iteration of the Labor Union Public Safety Subcommittee. Welcome, everybody. We have, as I indicated earlier, four bills to do this morning in approximately 35 minutes. And that is the chair's intention. Let's start out with House Bill. Adrian, are you on 3598?
I am.
You're on 1040? Let's do 1040. Senate Bill 1040 relating to locating specified facilities.
Hey, Mr. Chair and subcommittee members, you have in front of you B and Gross Senate Bill 1040, which sends to the general election ballot in November of 2000 the proposal for community notification processes and other requirements with regard to citing certain kinds of facilities which deal with treatment, rehabilitation, detention, or monitoring of certain offenders. The offenders include youth who have committed acts that are committed by an adult, would be a felony or class A misdemeanor, and a variety of terms that are used in the measures amendment to Oregon Revised Statute 169.690 that has to do with the local community advisory committees in for the Department of Corrections in citing facilities. Those terms are defined. That amendment to 169.60 also expands the applicability of the section to facilities cited by the Oregon Youth Authority and State Office for Services to Children and Families. The measure also specifies which facilities are exempt, and I have also provided to you the staff measure summary from the House Committee on Water and Environment, which is the committee that passed the bill to Ways and Means. The explanation in that staff measure summary is quite complete. There is a preliminary citing process and notification requirement to citizens and involving citizen input. There are also requirements for the operation of the facilities once they're cited. That includes carrying liability and professional liability insurance by the providers. It also restricts what kinds of the nature of the clientele that may not be provided services if the facility is located within 750 feet of a school or licensed child care center. And then after the facility is cited, and these are all subject to local ordinances, state and federal law, the facility would be required to continue and dialogue with the community and respond to any concerns raised by the community. Community is also defined in the measure.
Okay, that has been provided by
19-minute warning. The fiscal impact on the measure relates directly to the election expenses that could be incurred in addition to those that may already be budgeted for the general election. As of last week, however, I'll note that the Secretary of State's estimate for election expenditures are based on 14 measures, both initiatives and referendums being placed on the general election ballot. As of last week, three measures have been certified to the ballot by the Legislative Assembly. That doesn't include the numbers of initiatives that may actually make it to that ballot. So at this point, the measure doesn't implicate additional costs, but certainly once the number of measures is actually known, this could add as much as $45,000 to voter pamphlet costs. But we just won't know that until the election occurs. The other item in front of you for reference with regard to this measure is that a bill has already been adopted and enacted and signed by the governor, and it's Senate Bill 1104, which amends the same section of law. It does it in a different way, however, applies to different facilities. It does still apply to facilities that provide youth treatment or close custody facilities through the Oregon Youth Authority and State Office for Services to Children and Families. The implications of action on Senate Bill 1040B, as you have it in front of you, is that if you choose the policy that's contained within Senate Bill 1040, which will go to the ballot, is that the enactment of Senate Bill 1104 will stand until Senate Bill 1040 is enacted by a vote of the people in November of 2000. At that time, if it's enacted, then it would replace the provisions of law that are now in place once the bill is effective, that have been established by enrolled Senate Bill 1104. So I just needed to bring that to your attention. It is a policy difference in that it applies to different kinds of facilities. And Senate Bill 1040 has a larger notification process implied and explicit in the language that's in front of you. So for your consideration, there are also conflict amendments. There's staff D-19. They do actually two things, one of which is conflict. That is, it would repeal on the enactment, if enacted, Senate Bill 1040 would repeal the language that's contained in 1104. And it also changes somewhat the newspaper advertisement requirements by reducing the size of the newspaper ad that would be necessary under Senate Bill 1040. And it also clarifies that the publication requirement is 5 consecutive days in a daily newspaper, or if it's a weekly newspaper, then it would be for 2 weeks, 2 separate weekly publications. And that's the sum and substance of the DASB-19 amendment. So if you are, if you would like to choose the policy decision in Senate Bill 1040, then I would recommend that you adopt the DASB-19 amendment if you also agree with the concept of changing the newspaper advertising requirements.
Thanks, staff. Any questions, staff?
Sure.
Senator Wirtz.
Thank you very much, and good morning. If you could refresh my memory, one of the concerns I recall being raised on the Senate side had to do with whether language in the bill was inconsistent with requirements of the Fair Housing Act. Has legislative council had an opportunity to review that particular issue? And I raise the question because the questions that have come to me from constituents frame a concern that says we don't want to see discrimination take place against individuals receiving treatment for mental illness or substance abuse, discrimination in the form of preventing those persons from being able to receive services in certain communities.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gordley, in the B and Grove Senate Bill 1040, Section 10, which appears on page 4 of the measure, specifies that the implementation of the Act must be consistent with all applicable local ordinances and state and federal laws. It's my understanding that was intended to subject the process to Fair Housing and Americans with Disabilities Act consideration.
Adrian, the difference between 1040 and 1104, other than this DASB-19 amendment that you're discussing here, what is the real difference between the two bills at this point?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, Senate Bill 1104, which is the one that has been enacted, signed by the governor, and will go into effect 90 days after Tiny died, defines facilities differently. The facilities are defined as halfway houses, work release centers, or any other domiciliary facilities for persons released from penal or correctional facilities but still in the custody of city, counties, or public agencies. That's really current language in section 169.690, but adding to that definition then, youth care centers or other facilities that are authorized to accept youth offenders under a specific statute, and I apologize that I'm not well-versed in these areas of law, but that particular section that it refers to has to do with commitments to Oregon Youth Authority or state offices for services to children and families when youth has been found to be within the court's jurisdiction under yet another ORA section. So it appears to me to be on focusing on particular youth facilities. And that's pretty much what it does, is to redefine what that section is applicable to.
But it would not apply to adult facilities with these amendments.
The amendment, or the B and Go Senate Bill 1040, inclusive of the Staff B-19 amendment, would continue, as does 1104, the community notification by Department of Corrections, Oregon Youth Authority, and State Office for Services to Children and Families. My understanding from OYA and SDF is that they generally don't have any clientele who fall into the facilities which are covered then and defined in detail in Section 1 of the Ingrowth 1040. That is, the facilities that are defined in Section 2 may most primarily use for treatment, rehabilitation, detention, or monitoring of persons convicted of a felony or class A misdemeanor, except for those under the jurisdiction of Psychiatric Security Review Board, or youth offenders who are defined in another section of statute who have committed acts that, if committed by an adult, would be a class A misdemeanor or a felony.
Would the amendments, 1104 is already passed and then signed.
Correct.
If 1040 were to be amended, passed, and signed, would the net effect be prohibiting, in essence, the siting of future facilities that may in fact be needed?
Mr. Chair and Senator Hannon, I really apologize that I can't answer that question because I'm just not terribly familiar with the siting process or the specific facilities that are applicable, and whether there are facilities that are providing housing services to youth who fall under the definition in Senate Bill 1040, as opposed to those that are defined in already enrolled Senate Bill 1104. It appears to me, with my minimal understanding of this whole area, that they respond to different populations.
Let me rephrase the question, then, Ms. Sherman. Does this take away a city or county ability to site a facility where it best meets the needs of the community?
Mr. Chair and Senator Hannon, it would add to the process that the community would go through in having a project or a facility sited. The notification requirements, the restriction on siting a type of facility, meeting, providing services, detention, treatment, and so forth to certain offenders within 750 feet of a school or a licensed daycare center would restrict the physical location of certain facilities. I wasn't able to participate or listen in on all of the testimony that may have come from local governments. It's my understanding that this bill, Senate Bill 1040, moved through the process and was
further amended to respond to some local communities' needs and concerns, as well as those concerns of other state agencies, such as the Psychiatric Security Review Board and the Department of Corrections, that there the limitation on placement of facilities a certain distance from schools or licensed daycare centers would limit the physical locations, that some of those facilities that are institutions, schools, and licensed daycare centers may be so congregated throughout some communities that may impose a limitation on where facilities providing services to the clientele may be located.
Has there been any cost estimates on a city or a county not having the ability to site or locate a facility and what the potential cost is to the Oregon Youth Authority or Department of Corrections if they had to go out and buy a separate site to access that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Cannon, we don't have definitive numbers on that. Those were raised as issues of cost that could be incurred, but because we wouldn't know necessarily how many facilities would be needed over time and where they might ordinarily be sited absent this process, the agencies, in particular OYA, were not able to determine costs. They did make a statement, which appears in the impact statement for Senate Bill 1040, that they might have to retain youth in more intensive facilities, which are a higher daily cost than treatment facilities, for instance, if the siting treatment facilities was made more difficult in their view.
Mr. Chairman, this is no different than super siting the prison or anything else. A lot of people don't want it in their community or their backyard or wherever else. I'm concerned about the potential cost that it runs up with the Oregon Youth Authority and Corrections. It's the fact that we need the facility, whether we like them or not. And if there was a perfect world, we wouldn't have need for any of these facilities. But it's not a perfect world, so therefore we need them. And to put restrictions that are, to me, questionable or unreasonable, out in front of local government or Oregon Youth Authority or Corrections, say, here, go out and do your job, and then, oh, but I forgot to tell you, we got to tie both hands behind your back before you go out there and do it. That troubles me a great deal.
Mikhail is very coordinated, very athletic, and he does a pretty good job with both hands tied behind his back. Excuse me, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for the record, Multnomah County does not support the measure before us. Multnomah County has been placed. Well, let me back up and just say that the bill before us was introduced to take care of the perceived problem in Multnomah County. We now have 1104 signed by the governor. Multnomah County has in place or is working on a siting dispute resolution program. For those reasons, we already have a bill in place. We've got a program in Multnomah County. I just don't know that we need to spend more general fund dollars, almost 50,000 general fund dollars for an election to take care of an issue that is being addressed through 1104 and is being addressed in the particular county where the concern was raised in the first place. So I will not be supporting this measure.
Senator Gordley, I understand your concerns and well spoken. Any further discussion?
A couple quick questions, maybe, sir. To make it very clear, this doesn't affect prison siting at all.
Correct.
Second question is, would foster homes, regular foster homes for children, be covered by this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, the staff measure summary from the House Water and Environment Committee has a chart on page 2 that describes what
what facilities are covered and which ones are specifically excluded. Under excluded are adult foster homes, assisted living facilities, and residential care facilities.
I was concerned about that issue, and I think Representative Schrader is quite right in asking the question. I think the key phrase is on page 2, line 35, when we define facility, it says any facility primarily used for the treatment, rehabilitation, detention, or monitoring of persons. And I would state unequivocally that foster care homes for children are not primarily used for those. So primarily to me means more than half in this case, and you're not treating the kids, you're not rehabilitating them, you're not detaining them, and you're not monitoring them, you're loving them. So I'd say foster homes are not covered.
Appreciate that. Not sure I 100% agree. I've seen courts and communities disagree, but that's
the focus issue. I'm just making a record.
The question of ALFO, my understanding from my experience in local government is that such a facility would be, if it's particularly, but it's meant to exclude foster homes for children, would be a conditional use in almost every residential zone, and therefore would already require notification, maybe not all 250 feet, but certainly neighbors around there, so it seems a little duplicative, and I guess I'm wondering why we're doing it. It's already done on a regular basis in every community in the state of Oregon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Schrader, I don't think I can respond to why this is being done.
The rhetorical question.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lewis.
Well, I have some concerns about this bill, too. I think some of my concerns might have come from the original version of it. I received some letters from some constituents of mine who run residential care facilities for emotionally disturbed youth in my district, and they were concerned. But I think they've been. I have not looked up the ORS 443.400, but I think facilities in my district have been excluded. The ones that were of concern. I know that this is an important issue to Senator Wilde, but this is something that has occurred, and he, as Senator Gorby said, perhaps only perceived that he had a problem in his district. And therefore, I'm willing to get in the courtesy vote to move this forward to full, but I reserve the right to vote no on the forum.
Well, I appreciate those sentiments. I think all of us, I don't want to speak for all of us, I'll just speak for myself. As humorous as I was trying to be with regard to the analogy with Director Hill having his hands tied behind his back, I think there is some of that in this bill, and Rick has a difficult enough job as it is. It's a Herculean task, and I think we're fortunate to have him, but he needs to have all of his abilities and faculties free and unrestrained to try and get this job done. So, but I agree in terms of a courtesy vote. I don't mind moving this to a higher level and increasing the level of debate as we go. And with that, I'll accept the motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move the B-19 amendment.
Representative Mannix has moved the B-19 amendments into Senate Bill 1040. Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator,
I'm going to go ahead as the co-chair said and give you a courtesy vote. Mine may not go beyond full weight needs, however, but I will give you a courtesy vote to get it to that far.
Senator, as always, I appreciate you, sir. Mine may not go any further than full weight, but the
that would be fine too.
Representative Mannix has moved to amend Senate Bill 1040 with the B-19 amendments. Any further objections or any further discussion? Any objections to the amendments?
Objection.
Let the record show that Senator Gordley objected, and Representative Schrader. And having received a constitutional majority, it is so ordered. Representative Maddox.
Chairman, I move that we send Senate Bill 1040 as amended to the full committee on Ways and Means with a courtesy due pass recommendation.
Now, we could go so far as to send it to the full Ways and Means with no recommendation.
All right, we send it to full Ways and Means with no recommendation.
Representative Maddox has moved that we send Senate Bill 1040 as amended to the full Ways and Means Committee with no recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I'm having a little problem with courtesy at this late stage in the legislature. You know, we've courtesied about everything we can think of. You know, we're all nice people. I understand that. It's getting to the point where you know, you got to be make up your mind on something and make it happen. It's very tough for me because he is a senator. Senator Wilde, and I know this is important. I will give you a courtesy vote, but I'll tell you, I don't enjoy doing it. I think we've got to quit doing it, and I think we need to move ahead in this process.
Thank you, Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wood.
I would just say that, you know, the Senate had their chance and the bill was on the Senate floor. And you said it was.
Oh, we've got another chance.
You can tell it's very civilized process we go through here. Representative Manning.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to note a couple of things. First of all, this is a notice bill, not a citing restriction bill, but it does put a lot of process in place. It's important to note that use of the word primarily, I'd emphasize that 10 times over if this ever got out of the body. Page 2, line 35. It's important to note the exclusion. Important to note the notification requirements for later stated. I would also want to take for the record, it seems to me that a failure to follow the notification requirements should not be fatal to some facility being able to be cited somewhere. It would simply be considered something that's worth a slap on the wrist and a reminder not to do it again. I would add, too, that the implementation of this act must be consistent with all applicable local ordinances and state and federal laws, which I find interesting because it sounds like we're saying that instead of the state preempting the local ordinances, that the state law must be consistent with the local ordinances, which is remarkable. I've never seen that before, and raises a lot of questions. It's also interesting it applies only to facilities established on or after the effective date of this 1999 Act. The 1990 Act, however, is not going to be effective unless it passes in a general election, which is going to be held in November 2000. So this would go into effect in December 2000, and in January 2001, the legislature will be back in session. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I want to get that all in there. And with that, you have my courtesy to go away from me.
All right. Representative Mannix has moved Senate Bill 1040 as amended to the full Ways and Means with no recommendation. Any objections?
Objection.
Senator Gormley and Representative Schrader are sending votes. The head in the majority, so ordered. Carriers.
Thinking about voting no.
Representative Lewis. That's as far as we'll go.
Thank you so much.
See what happens when you show up to committee?
When you run this office factory, sometimes you have to stand for the good.
Yeah. Okay, we will end the work session on Senate Bill 1040. And is Robin here? Let's try to bang out 3598 real quick because the Senate's going to have to go in 5 minutes.
Okay.
I don't see this. You know what? If that's the case, excuse me.
Yeah, that's four sources.
We do 3598 like bang.
Yes.
All right. We'll open the work session on House Bill 3598.
Do you want anything from staff, Mr. Chairman?
I think everybody knows what's going on here.
Chairman,
all the parties have come to complete agreement. It's the biggest love fest I've ever seen. After all, we are a civilized process here.
Mr. Chairman, since you're so civilized, I'd move the dash A9 amendments down to 3598.
Any discussion? Any objections? Senator Hannon has moved the dash A9.
Yes.
A9 into House Bill 3598 in discussion. Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, this then turns it into a Public Defense Services Commission to study the issue and report back, and I would urge its approval. And it's in its report committee with a pre-pass recommendation.
And just for clarification, I don't know that I went through them. There are a couple of budget notes that relate to recording requirements.
I would so move LFO amendments or recommendations in that place.
Does that include the 100%?
Yes, it
does. Yeah.
Senator Hannon has moved House Bill 3598 as amended by the A9. A9 to reflect the LFO budget reports, including the budget notes. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. No courtesy votes? Let the record show there are no courtesy votes.
This would be good stuff.
I mean, this is a very good show, and that's excellent work today. Carriers. Senator Hannon,
yes.
In full, and on the Senate side, Representative Mannix, on the House side. Got that down. We will end the work session on House Bill 3598, and we will open the work session on Senate Bill 555, relating to juveniles. I have a suspicion the House is going to get a call at about 10:01. So we've got 20 minutes.
Okay, a short synopsis of where Senate Bill 555 is. It passed the Senate in its union growth form. This is how it came out of this subcommittee. It's back from the full committee now for several potential amendments and a consideration of a budget note. You have before you the D24 amendments. These are conflict amendments. Senate Bill 1127, which deals with semi-independent status for some agencies, makes references to the Oregon Children's Coordinating Council. Senate Bill 555 eliminates that council, and so these conflict amendments would make the necessary changes to Senate Bill 1127.
Okay, conflict amendments D24s. Let's go through the budget note.
Okay. There's a proposed budget note for you. It's a relatively long one. There's basically two pieces to this. One is the pertinent direct folks to work together to look at using existing facilities for culturally appropriate shelter care and residential alcohol and drug treatment. And then the second piece of this is discussing services for delinquent, dependent, and at-risk juvenile females, and there's a region to be selected by the Juvenile Crime Prevention Advisory Committee to look at a regional system of services for that group of individuals, and there's a requirement that there be a system in place by January 1, 2000, and then there's some additional language about what that system is going to include.
And there's no additional fiscal cost?
There's no additional fiscal cost. The intention is that the folks work together within the existing resources.
Representative,
in the budget note, it's a little unclear from the wording, I think, that when you get down past the word female, the application of a region, all of a sudden you're talking about a region. There's nothing in the prior information that indicates how that should be selected or why we're doing just one region as to state or all that sort of thing. And does that apply to the youth or the
female? Let me tell you what that does. There's three things that it adjusts an anomaly between OYA and tribal governments in how they handle convicted youth that are in the state system. It allows regions, a region or even a county, to do gender-specific female programs, and it allows counties that have additional bed capacity to work on some of their own juvenile justice programs, all within existing resources, federal grants, justice grants, federal justice grants, and local money. Is that a pretty fair synopsis of it, Rick? Let the record show Director Dale is saying that.
I appreciate the explanation. That does help, but I guess I'm not clear on the sentence. It says, juvenile crime, the vice criminal shall select a region by September 30th, 1999. There's a pilot region that's going to be doing this.
Sir, I am. We are in work session. I think we need conflict amendments. I think we need
one at a time.
Okay.
I would move the adoption of the proposed budget note for Senate Bill 555 as proposed by LFO.
Senator Hanna has moved the adoption of the budget note as reported by LFO. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I would just observe that there are a couple of populations being addressed in this budget note. It refers to tribal youth and also females. And my observation is that over time we have not done enough to provide services to this underserved population of youth of color, generally speaking, not just tribal youth, but also females. And if this is an attempt to get at some of that, I would say that's a positive thing. But in the larger scheme of things, females are still underserved, and so are youth of color. And that's an issue that we need to keep looking at from a statewide perspective.
If I can be somewhat blunt, I think this deals more with gender-specific female type programs and tribal entities and any other youth of color.
I understand that, and again, I think that's a positive thing. But we have 36 counties, and many of those counties have similar issues, and you know, I'm going to support that, but I'm saying we are not doing enough to provide services to these populations. We need to do more. And this just spotlights the problem.
I think this is a small step. I would agree, Senator Burley. I think some of the excellent work that was done early in the session by Senator Bryant and just the excellent conference or committee, whatever you want to call it, that we convened early in the session and really highlighted that. I think this is an effort to help raise that profile on the radar screen for, you know, legislators to come, and I appreciate your comments, and I agree with you. Representative Manning.
Just a comment. The word rural is also in there. We're talking not just tribal youth, not just females, but also rural youth who sometimes get left out of the mix. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Senator Hannon has moved we accept the budget notes as represented, the budget note as represented by LFO. Any further discussion? Any objections? See none. So ordered.
Okay.
Conflict amendment. Representative or Senator Hannon.
Before I move the conflict amendment, LFO, is there any other budgetary items we need to include here and the proposed amendments?
There are another set of proposed amendments, the B-25 amendments. These incorporate amendments that this committee previously looked at as the A-16s and the A-22s. These are ones that the chair of the substantive committee that dealt with this bill has signed off of. They tie the existing grant schemes in the State Commission on Children and Families more closely with the comprehensive plan. They make some other discussion regarding how youth investment grants are to be used in family preservation and support grants.
That's B-25.
It's a compilation of the two amendments that this committee previously looked at as the A-16s and within the A-22s, which the other piece of this is more specific in terms of what the legislative fiscal office audits in terms of a performance audit for the service children and families.
And we still have to adopt the B-24 conflict amendment in addition.
Yes.
The B-24s and the B-25s are the two sets of amendments that are before the subcommittee.
Okay.
Is there any... Let's deal with the amendments. Those in a minute. But am I correct in my understanding, if I heard you right, I just heard about these for the first time this morning. These reflect exactly the 16s and 22s.
Yes. And they were needed because we had a B in growth bill rather than an A in growth bill. The others were A16, A22. If you had a B in growth bill, you have to have them revamped by legislative council to address the B in growth bill. And they're both in here. Two sections.
I think using the magic power of the chair, I would rather consider the amendments separately. conflict amendments, and then we can get into that.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that B-24 amendment dated 7-17-99 to Senate Bill 555.
Senator Hannon has moved the conflict amendments. The B-24 conflict amendment in the Senate Bill 555. Any discussion?
Yeah.
Representative Schroeder.
What is a Senate Bill 1127?
Senate Bill 1127 is a bill that gives certain boards and commissions semi-independent agency status for the 99-2001 biennium. One of those that's affected is the Children's Trust Fund. In the amendment to the language, existing language for Children's Trust Fund, there's a reference to the Oregon Coordinating Council on Children, which in Senate Bill 555 is abolished. And so what this does is take out the sections of Senate Bill 1127 that have references to that Coordinating Council.
Any questions? For Kenny. Any further discussion on the conflict amendments? Any objections to the conflict amendments? Seeing none, the B-24 conflict amendments are amended into Senate Bill 555, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, could I make an inquiry on whose amendments are B-25?
I believe they're Representative Mannix.
If I may, can I get the discussion rolling?
I'm somewhat surprised to see them this morning. I'm a party kind of guy.
I got them last night, Mr. Chairman. I may?
Yes.
First, I'll move the B-25 amendments deliberately in front of us, if I may. And I'll explain that I found out that we had the A-16 and the A-22s in front of us before. I intended to bring them to the committee and then found that because we had a B in gross bill, we needed to have B version amendments, which is these are exactly what were in the A-16 and the A-22s before, simply taken by legislative council and blended to fit the B in growth bill. The first part of the B-25 amendment is the outline of what I'll call the mission statements about the use of the grant, and they were the A-22 amendments. The second part of these amendments are a reflection of the A-16, when you begin on page 2, line 21, the discussion of Joint Legislative Audit Committee. That is, I take it back. The first part was A-22. The second part, the section 46 language, is a reflection of what were the A-16 amendments. And I apologize, Mr. Chairman, I didn't realize that when I sent these down that they would not have gotten to you, too, because they were simply meant to be a substitute number for the earlier amendments that had been offered. Representative Cruz has supported these amendments throughout the process, and I joined him in supporting him. Senator Bryant also supports these amendments. The first part of these amendments are designed to identify the intent of the legislature as to how the grant should be used, quite precisely. The second part is to provide accountability through an audit process joint to the fiscal audit program.
via the Joint Legislative Audit Committee, I should say, and the Legislative Fiscal Officer. And these have been discussed before. The idea is to make sure that as we proceed in these directions with all the dynamic changes, that we be clear about what kinds of programs we want to see funded, and also be clear about checking on the efficacy of the programs. And so I'll leave it at that.
Senator Hannon. What would happen, Representative, if we didn't adopt these amendments? Then what is the status of the proposed language in the bill that we're somehow changing through these amendments?
The, if I may, Mr. Chairman, these additions are what I'll call firewalls, the first part, to say, look, this money is supposed to go for these purposes. Don't start moving it around to do other things, which has happened and can happen. And in fact, we've been told could happen in regard to the appropriations herein. The second part says, let's find out how, let's follow up on the programs, let's make sure that these programs are all coordinated and working well. It's an audit process, the performance audit process, to see if, as the bill is being implemented, it's working well.
Go get your quorum elsewhere.
There are a whole bunch of senators down the hall. So go check that out and come back through here.
We promise
we'll still be
here. Okay. I like it. I want to ask the representative another question. Does this prevent or preclude what has somewhat been discussed or identified as the second look? To say, let's look at this program, let's determine if the funding, you talked about a firewall. Is the firewall intended to serve a specific purpose, or is it just generally accepted that you shall not approach this area, period?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, it's not directed at anything specific. It's generally designed to say we've funded in certain directions in certain parts of the statutes in these programs, and we want to see the funds used in those areas as we've defined those areas. It's written in a way that is general enough within those areas to not say you must do it this particular way, but to prevent someone from basically pulling all the funds out of one area and shoving them somewhere else, to reprioritize, changing the priorities that the legislature established.
Typically, Mr. Chairman, typically most agencies are not willing to commit political genocide by doing something. My question is, why do we need to have that kind of reference in the statutes? And I guess maybe if I have a fault, I've been around here too long, and I trust them, these agency heads, when they say they're not going to do something, I accept them at perhaps their face value, rather than putting every T and crossing it and dotting every I and putting it in the statute. That would be my concern with it, and just candidly say, I don't know. I guess I'm looking for a better reason or logic to insert these types of amendments.
Mr. Chairman, of that name.
These are local control provisions. They say, for instance, and the second one, the Great Start Grant shall be used to fund community strategy for young children and their families as determined in the local coordinated comprehensive plan. The phrase keeps popping up, and this is a way to prevent some state agencies from preventing the local plan from being implemented the way the plan was approved, allowing the local authorities to have, in a way, we're making it a little less flexible for the state agencies and more flexible for the local folks. We're setting some broad parameters, and then within that we're just saying, once you've approved these local plans and the folks are doing this, we don't want the state agencies interfering in those local plans. I think that's my generic way of describing it. It is a local control provision.
Okay.
My question, I guess, would be is,
I understand where you're going here, but in 555, as it currently exists, aren't the funds directed, and 5548, aren't the funds directed in specific amounts to local jurisdictions? Or the local commissions, functionally?
Yes, generally speaking, yes. If I may, we're looking at the main point is successful strategies that have been identified and funded, and the local coordinated comprehensive plan has been established, and the concern is that in the interim, an agency says, yeah, well, we did approve that plan, but now in making our grants, we're going to shift a bit, and you can still have that plan, that's all nice, but we're going to make you move in a different direction within your own plan. This backs up and says, no, that's the local coordinated plan. Let them have the room within their plan to do this.
But Mr. Chair?
Senator Gordon.
Mr. Chair, I would just argue strenuously against this approach, which I see as much too prescriptive. I think that the locals, the whole intent of the plan is that local jurisdictions would in fact determine what programs they want, how they want to carry those programs out, and how they would spend dollars available. I don't see the language in the bill would have to be pointed out to me that says the state can remove those things. And so I'm going to be opposing the what is now the dash the 25 as just being too prescriptive.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've had some real problems with the Commission on Children and Families and how they pick their programs that have been described in the state and the process. I'm nervous about a process that is giving in, and I know where we are in this issue, and it started years ago when we fought this battle of making it better and better. I think maybe we're trying to go a little bit too far with this, for the reason that commissions, in some cases, not properly implement what should be implemented. Are we giving them an out in this process? We're adding an audit. I like the audit part, because that way we have oversight of what's happening. But I'm nervous about some commissions in this state are good ones and they're bad. That's the whole point. Some are not doing a good job. Are we giving those bad ones more leeway in this process? The question would be directed at Justin Madison for his amendment. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
I think it's a legitimate question. The drift, which is more than the drift, the direction of 555 is to make local authorities more accountable for all of their planning process and all their strategies. The turnabout on that is to say, then once we've made you more accountable, we're also going to let you, within that accountability, have some flexibility. That's what the first part of the amendments were designed to do. I would recognize, too, Mr. Chairman, by the way, that the second part of the amendments are really separable, and I don't know why LC came back putting them both together when they were really two separate concepts. One is the legislative audit process, and the other is how you define how the local plans work. This is simply an attempt to say, all right, we're going to hold you accountable. We're going to give you these local strategies. But once we've done that, we're going to let you work within those parameters. And I won't be offended for whichever way you want to choose to vote on that.
Representative Prozanski.
Mr. Chair, based on what I've heard at this point, I'm going to support the audit part, but not the other part. So if we're going to go forward with these, I'd like to see them separated out. If not, then we just break, not accept these amendments at all, and let the agencies and commissions do what they need to do. And I think, as good Senator Hannon said, I've not seen too many agencies or commissions that are having to report back to us running amok without realizing what the ramifications of such conduct will be.
Good
Mr. Chairman,
Senator or Representative Mann.
I would move to amend my motion, if I could borrow a copy, so as to delete the first part of the B-25 amendment and implement only the amendments as to the audit beginning on page 2, line 21.
Representative Mannix has moved to amend, where are the 25? There we go. Starting on where?
We will delete the...
Starting page 2, line 21.
You keep from page 2, line 21 on.
Okay, now, I recognize your motion. Well, let me ask you a question. Ask the committee a question. Procedural. Isn't it easier just to conceptually amend the A-16?
Certainly, if you wish to do that, Mr. Chairman. I'd certainly modify my motion to be that we conceptually amend the A-16 into the bill.
Okay. Before we go through all this, let's... Let me do an informal poll. Are there apparently?
Mr. Chairman, I would rather stay here. Could we have a short recess to discuss this? I'm not comfortable in pursuing this at this time unless you're absolutely necessary. You need the vote, but
I
still have some reservations.
Based on the sage advice of Senator Hannon, I will call a short recess. Continue to sit on the edge of your seat. I got to tell you, I love this committee, and I am extremely proud of how this committee works together. And what we've decided in a very collaborative way is we're going to convene a subcommittee of the subcommittee. I will appoint Senator Gordon Lee. Anyone who wants to come from this committee is more than welcome, but I just officially will appoint Senator Gordon Lee, Representative Mannix, Representative Schrader, Senator Hannon, to meet with representatives from OIA and the governor's office. To try to work through these issues, see what some of the pluses and the minuses are, and I have full faith and confidence in their ability. I'd like to do a time certain. Is there...
My office is available at noon today.
Okay. Can those individuals and Pam and Rick, can you be there, Senator Gordley's office, at noon? And we have, I mean, you know, all of our schedules are like crazy. We don't know what we're doing in 5 minutes, let alone at noon. I would certainly try to be there as well. Yeah, we ought to have represented the commission there as well. Let's try and hammer this thing out. I got to tell you, if we don't come to a resolution on this, I'm not waiting around. We're going to reconvene. Is an hour enough time?
Yeah.
You know, if we don't come to a resolution on this thing that works, we're just going to have to move the bill as is, I guess, because there's a lot of good in this bill, and I don't want to get hung up on some amendments. We're going to meet Senator Gordley's office at noon, and then we will reconvene here. We're in session one. Oh, let's see now. What steps for the committee to get back together? What closer?
Well, 3 o'clock would be better.
Let's try 3 o'clock.
Gives the subcommittee an opportunity to meet, and then if any additional language has to go to the legislative council, it goes in some creation.
Good. Okay. And then we will reconvene at 1 o'clock. You can see this public notice at 3.
We'll be turning up at 318.
And we'll try to do that at 318 at that time.
Okie dokie.
Okay. We are adjourned. that wasn't